It's so frustrating.
It is crazy. You know, if you're working for me, but you're not working for me, that doesn't work for me. Right.
That's so good.
Well said.
State. Courtney, your friends about to show you how to generate wealth. Get educated, do for yourself. Add a couple notches to your belt. Under all is the land. Under all is the land. The real, real, real. Under all is the land. Under all is the land. The real, real, real estate. Coming to you live from Acme Real Estate in Los Angeles, California.
Welcome to Under All is the Land, episode 109, changes we'd like to see in the industry and wacky real estate laws. I'm your host, Courtney Polis, here with my rock star co-stars, Silke Fernald.
Hi.
And the beautiful Dominique Madden.
Hello.
Silke, you're beautiful too. I just
I felt left out for a second.
I know.
Don't neglect the redhead.
I will never neglect the redhead.
Do
you want me to do it again?
No, this is perfect.
Okay, great. All right. Well, welcome. Today we're going to talk about some of the things we've been talking about. Yeah, like things we'd like to see change in the real estate industry. And, you know, it's a challenge to you guys out there, our leadership in our field. Why haven't these things changed yet? Mm-hmm. You know, my favorite one, of course, of all time is clear cooperation, which is just the most lopsided policy I think NAR has ever put out. It was poorly thought out. It was poorly executed, and it affects people in very different ways and creates loopholes for large brokerages to try and dominate over smaller brokerages. And I've always felt one of the beautiful things about real estate is that you can be your own broker, like a one-man show. You can be a boutique. You can be a bigger brokerage. But we all have to abide under the same code of ethics, and we all have to abide by the same, like, general rules. So I don't understand what they were thinking when they decided to ban all pocket listings, pretty much except for big brokerages. Mm-hmm. I think that policy needs to be rethought, and also, you know, people aren't even abiding by it anyway, so it's kind of like, eh.
Nobody, the Wild West out there.
Get it out of here. Didn't work.
Yeah. Yep. You know, they did it under the guise that they were trying to keep people from being excluded from listings, but then you exclude people from listings, mm-hmm, if they're not under the same brokerage. It doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense.
You have
at
one
all.
Broker overseeing, like,
a whole state.
200 or 400 or 800
or 10,000.
And one broker does, what, 50? And then so this broker has the advantage. Or the agents under that broker have the advantage. And I had actually agents at said broker try to send me off markets and wanted a fee for that.
Like, how about that? A little black market
talking
for
about
pocket
ethical
listings.
Wow. Behavior. Crazy. I mean, unethical behavior. Just as crazy.
Know, maybe there should be a limit. I mean, because honestly, listen, I'm a broker. We've got like 50 agents. And I will honestly say that's a lot of phone calls and a lot of management and a lot of engagement. And I probably engage more than a lot of brokers.
For sure.
But how can one broker be for an entire state? I think that that's a place to
because
start.
Because they call them broker, and then they have their little managers underneath.
Right, I know.
So it's like a whole thing. Like that broker doesn't. I'm
that's
sure
the
that
loophole,
get
though.
Many calls,
Zillow,
that's
the real
right.
estate brokerage, has one broker for the right. whole state of California. Compass has one broker for the state of California. Mm-hmm. That one broker can't possibly do the amount of management for 10,000 agents right. or 15,000 agents. Like, I think it should be office by office.
It's the massive loophole, basically.
It's the massive loophole.
They should just get rid of the
get
whole thing.
Get rid of it.
I mean,
it doesn't work.
It doesn't benefit who we work for, which is
the
client, right?
The client.
And if you're not getting all the exposure you can, which whether it's on market or off market, you know, if it's off market, then you want it to be shopped to as many people as you can possibly shop it to off market.
Right.
Right? But now we're doing it with our hands tied behind our back, or at least in secret, like prohibition style.
And we talked about how this is a conflict with the code of ethics, which very clearly says we are under no obligation to even cooperate with another brokerage. So if my seller says, listen, I only want you to represent this, then we can't put it in the MLS, mm-hmm, because we're not offering a cooperating commission. Mm-hmm. So it is a catch-22, and in my opinion, in direct conflict with equality and equal treatment of different brokers in our
and
industry.
And it's used as marketing as
and
well.
And it's used as marketing, and now there's a black market.
Basic, yeah, and they also say, well, buyers come to us because we have something this other person doesn't have.
Right. It's like, so an unfair advantage. I don't like it. I hate it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I challenge our leadership to rethink it and get rid of it. Mm-hmm. I'm talking to you, Sandra Miller. Okay. Another thing is uniform MLS entry round days on market. Like, oh really, gosh, the days on market count needs to stop when there are two signatures on a contract. Mm-hmm. That is the true amount of time between going live and accepting an offer. And to me, that should just be standardized, because the MLS really has like one job, which is good data. So if your data is not right, we're using that bad, inaccurate data to create value, you know, approximations for our listing presentations and comps for our appraisers on buy side, all the things, then it needs to be correct. So somebody at the MLS needs to standardize this and make sure that everyone knows, and all brokers need to follow, days on market count stops when two signatures are on the contract.
Stops when the status changes, period.
When no the matter status what you changes do. From mm-hmm. active to anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's the truth.
To clarify for people, whenever you're changing the status on a listing from active to active under contract, which is when there's been signatures, but there might still be contingencies. Or, you know, or they're looking for backup offers for whatever reason, you know, then you still keep counting the days. So when people are looking at it and trying to read accurate data, they're not seeing that, it was on for 10 days, really, truly. They're seeing that those day counts are still ticking once that status has changed. So it skews the data for people who are trying to, like, assess it. Like, how long did this thing really sit on market before...
Exactly.
They accepted an offer.
And if it creates a problem for me, if I have clients who are like, please make this available for backup. I want a backup offer. Okay, seller, I want to get you that backup offer. But by me showing it as looking for backup or active contingent, I'm making my stats as an agent look lower, because now it looks like there's greater days on market. Mm-hmm. So you see people changing it depending, even though the contract that they have accepted has contingencies. Mm-hmm. It's just completely inaccurate data. Mm-hmm. So this is something very, very important that I think we need to change. What's your pet?
100%.
Pet. Thing you'd like to change.
My thing, I would love for us listing agents to have our phone number, our email address, and our name on any third-party aggregator sites on our listings.
As big as the buyer agent that they're trying to sell the leads
to. So when buyers go to XYZ aggregator site and try to contact me, they can. They don't have to find it, or maybe not find it, right? Some don't even display it. So I think that is just because it's not fair. We pay for the listing photos. We provide the listing. We should be able to get credit and be reachable to buyers that want to reach out to us.
I don't think our industry could have predicted that there would be vendors, like people who are aggregator sites that are vendors, that turn into real estate brokerages as well. And they haven't accommodated that change by putting rules in place to say, look, you need to honor your colleagues here. Now you're a broker too. They're telling us we can't talk shit about our competition when they're out there talking a lot of shit about the individual agents, and NAR is allowing them to have policies in place that diminish the majority of the realtor population. It is so infuriating to me.
Totally.
Yeah. I'm like, how much are they paying them? Who are they paying? That's... Is there somebody getting paid?
And well, you know, for buyers who don't know, because I think a lot of buyers don't know this, when you go to certain sites that I cannot name, but when you go to certain sites, the person that you see as the contact is someone who's paid for promotion, essentially. They've paid to be on that list of top three agents that you can contact on that listing. So it might not actually be the listing agent who you're reaching out to. Most of the time it's not, unless you're going to realtor.com. But if you're not on realtor.com, the person that you're reaching out to is not the listing agent. So whereas you think you're reaching out to someone to schedule a direct showing, it's actually an agent now who's being put with you, and there might be some...
Yeah. They have nothing to do with
the transaction. They don't know anything about the property.
Yeah.
You know, so what we want to fight for is for our own names to be on the listings, because we're the ones who do all the prep work. We're the actual listing agents. Well, we're the people who should be the resource for the people who are reaching out to ask questions about it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Rather than us paying for our own leads on our own listings.
Right, which is something that we used to do. We used to have to pay certain aggregator sites to even appear on our own listings, and they're using our pictures through our MLS in compliance with IDX, like to promote their agents over us and confuse the buying public. So my opinion, it at least needs to be very clear. This is a person not affiliated with this listing who's happy to inquire on things for you. Mm-hmm. And this is the actual listing agent. Mm-hmm. And they need to be equal so the buyer, the consumer, can make a choice as to which direction they'd like to go. And that's going to put the onus on those aggregator sites to have higher quality representatives instead of people just being default thrown into buyer agency with somebody they haven't even vetted.
Totally. They're basically stealing business from us and we paying for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, they won't even let us put our contact information in the body of the text so that it's syndicates there. To
That's
the aggregator.
That's another change sites. I'd love to see made. Mm-hmm. Why won't the MLS allow us to brand our marketing direct to consumers, but allows big aggregator sites to get their, you know, to take our stuff and put it on their big branded sites with all their money and SoftBank money and all the things behind it? And like market branded content to the consumer.
Yeah. It makes my skin crawl.
It makes my skin crawl.
You like to say, follow the money.
Follow the money.
So let's see, follow that.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what's happening.
I mean, it's 100%.
And our own MLS that we supposedly own says, well, that's just the rules.
You know, I was in one of the meetings and what they said was, and this is so like antiquated, that if we put our website or contact information in the body of the text, that there are agents who complained that maybe their buyers would go directly to the listing agent. That was their reasoning for not allowing us to have branded content direct to consumer. I said, that is so antiquated.
Yeah.
If you have a signed exclusivity agreement with your buyers, you have no risk mm-hmm. of being poached by the listing agent. But by the way, we have signs in the yard. We have open houses. You can contact the listing agent anyway. So, you know, it's the onus is on the buyer mm-hmm. agent to get an exclusivity mm-hmm. agreement if you really want to call them your buyer. Mm-hmm. And our MLS needs to get out of the way, realize the market has changed. Branding is important. We no longer control the inventory and you need to give your membership a fighting chance of, you know, marketing to the direct to consumer instead of allowing these bigger guys to just run right over us.
You know, issues like this are why the MLS is digging its own grave. And that's why people are making alternatives like the NLS, the National Listing Service, formerly the PLS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even CoStar.
I would love to know if they're trying to syndicate or what they're doing and if we can brand on theirs.
You can brand on theirs. You can brand on theirs. And on CoStars, it's supposed to be more agent-centric. And I'm like, if the MLS doesn't get with the program, they're going to be left behind.
For sure.
Because the data's not right. Preventing us from marketing directly to consumers is not right. And the policies that they're enforcing on behalf of NAR are not right.
Totally.
The school boundary lines are sometimes not right.
Not right.
And then it makes us look like complete idiots.
Yep.
But I'm trusting this database. I'm paying you to have correct information on there.
Yeah.
Totally.
Don't stand in my way. Thank you.
Don't stand in my way. Mm-hmm. I mean, our sellers hire us for our branding. So why MLS, you make us remove all of our branding in order to advertise
cross, so you can deliver cross, it to the you know, people that pay you, the third-party aggregator sites.
It's so frustrating.
It is crazy. You know, if you're working for me, but you're not working for me, that doesn't work for me.
Right.
That's so good.
Well said. Oh, my gosh. And one more thing I want to bring up, and then we're going to bring on a very special guest to talk about some changes she would like to see in the real estate industry and also some wacky real estate laws that are among us right now, on the table right now, is corporate purchasing. Where is the federal government? I saw another article. I think you sent it to me. Jeff Bezos-backed investment group bought another
$23 million in houses in Texas.
And
single-family houses that should be reserved for residential owner-occupier buyers versus people who are going to turn them into rentals.
Right.
The people who are manipulating our economy right now are working with the big money.
Thank you.
And they are the ones pumping this news.
Narrative.
This narrative that the sky is falling and it's causing people to take a pause on their buying. And guess who it's benefiting? The people
Goldman
with the
Sachs,
deep pockets.
Jeff Bezos. Yeah, who want to buy residential real estate.
And
they
who can
see
take
the value,
advantage of
and they
panic
have
selling.
Money to make these news stories happen. Yep.
Yes, and New York Times, for example, jumps right in.
And
they're feeding the narrative. And
not
I
just New York
calls.
Times.
Oh, all of them.
All CAR
of them.
Just sent out a big email saying, like, how to deal with, what was it, crisis?
It's literally at the top of the zip forms. Like, at the top of the zip forms, which is where we prep all of our forms, it has, like, a recession, you know, recession starter kit. Recession-proof yourself
just
starter
stupid.
Kit.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's like,
and
guys.
Even our colleagues, we get emails and newsletters from, are pumping this narrative. And I always ask, and I would encourage you to ask yourself, who wins?
Right.
If this narrative wins, is it the homeowner, the regular buyer that wins? No, they want to scare regular buyers, especially at the low end, out of the market, mm-hmm. creating less demand. Now the prices come down and they mm-hmm. can acquire more mm-hmm. and let it appreciate, turn it into rentals,
exactly.
further removing people from home ownership, mm-hmm. which is the singular, in my opinion, way to build financial equality and legacy money in this country right now.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And you yes. know, I think they bank on people not actually doing their research, but only looking at the headlines.
That's
because
it.
If you do your research, like if you listen to our last podcast and you heard
Leslie Black
tell you that she has people who are still capturing rates in the fours and fives, then where's this conversation about the high interest rates going? Mm-hmm. Those are still great interest rates. I just had a client lock a 3.25% mm-hmm. interest rate. They
yep.
still exist. So don't let people fill your head with shit.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
problem is people don't research. They read
yeah.
the headlines.
It's
and
true.
And that's it. 5 seconds.
Right. And
I
they don't
it.
Believe
okay.
the real estate agent because they think we just want to sell.
But a lot of real estate agents also believe the headlines.
That's
it's
true.
They don't understand
it's
how to educate their buyers. That's all we do right now. I feel like I have this conversation every
yep.
day with
it's
my
so
buyers.
True.
Like,
don't
is it a good time to buy?
Do
I'm
it.
Like, it's
don't
the best time to buy.
Yes.
Let's buy.
Yeah. Yes.
Go.
It's
buy when everyone
right
else
now.
is freaking believing
yes.
these
yeah.
stupid
exactly.
headlines.
Exactly.
You know, when I bought, it was when the pandemic was happening and mm-hmm. everybody thought that, you know, it was all over. But I was like, it's not all over. Like, mm-hmm. things are going to be fine. People are going to realize that this is...
The world is
right.
not ending.
The world
right.
is not ending.
Yes.
Yeah. And you know what? I got a great deal because yeah. everyone else was scared.
Yeah.
yeah. Well, now everybody else is getting scared again. And please don't get scared. Like, stop. You know? Yeah. We're getting all worked up.
Or talk to one of us. We'll talk to you about it.
Talk you off the ledge because it's seriously.
Totally. Agents, like, buyers, sellers, whoever.
Stop. Yes.
All right. Wow. I feel so energized. I'd like to introduce our special guest, Allison McCracken, who is one of our real estate colleagues here in Los Angeles. And she has some insider information on something you probably haven't heard about, which is the wildlife ordinance, which could affect a very large portion of the hills between the 405 and the 101 in the center of our city. Allison, welcome to Under All is the
Woo!
Land. Allison McCracken.
Hello.
Hello. Allison McCracken's team is called the McCracken Team. How appropriate.
it's very original. You know, the state of California mandates that you use a name. So, you know.
Yes, it is important to have a name. Names are good in real estate. So we're talking about things I'm sure you overheard, like some of the things we're talking about that we'd like to see changes. Do you have any changes you'd like to see in our industry?
You know, I got into residential real estate with the vision of reshaping some of the things that we see, and one of them happens to do with how we approach our sellers that are over the age of 55 and how we manage, you know, their estates. They have different obstacles when they're moving, you know, boxes aren't as easy to pick up. And so there are a lot more services that we as real estate professionals provide when we're dealing with that generation. So I really wanted to shine a light on that and disrupt the industry a little so people knew to seek out the proper real estate professional when they're approaching those changes.
You know what? We were also talking about how a lot of senior citizens don't know the true value of their home and they get duped out of potentially legacy money for their children just by aggressive salespeople, door knockers, or like people who are like, you know, we can get your cash offer right now. And it's like, we see what it sold for and we're like, whoa, that person yeah. really undersold. So I think there's more like abuse too.
100%. Like financial abuse is the number one form of abuse when it comes to senior citizens. It's not physical. And most of the time when we see that financial abuse, it occurs from people they trust. So their children, their financial advisors, their attorneys, and it oftentimes has to do with the real estate being all of a sudden signed over to the, you know, sons who's got an addiction, who has a girlfriend, and all of a sudden, you know, it's very sad what can happen.
Yeah, you know, right here in Sunset Plaza, I had a friend whose father was significantly older than her. Like, he was, I think he was 60 when he married her mom, who was 20, mm-hmm. kind of Hollywood thing. And so when he was 85, she was like 25 or something, you know? And she lived in this house in Sunset Plaza. You know, it's very expensive there, Sunset Boulevard, West Hollywood. And the gardener got a quit claim deed and brought it over and had her ailing 85-year-old grandfather. He didn't know what he was signing. He's on like morphine, dying of cancer, and had him sign over the deed to their house. The kid spent pretty much the entire fortune trying to get the property back in court.
The gardener?
The gardener.
That is insane.
The lawyers made the money on that one.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But it was like so obvious and so sad and so easy. It was such a, yeah, the gardener. Somebody I'm sure he kind of trusted. I don't think he knew what he was signing. He was so old and sick and very sick.
You can see how that can happen, you know, especially as you have like aging family members and you see how like, you know, how sensitive they are and how like, you know, how they could be subject to that.
And how they feel kind of like powerless in the world. Like they don't know what's happening or they've never been through this before.
Right. Mm-hmm. We had that listing where there was a woman who was in hospice and the, it wasn't a listing. It was, we were helping a flipper buy a fixer. Do you remember? And there was a woman who was in hospice and the nurses had her sign a lease, a fake lease. And they moved in. You know, and squatted, right? I don't know if it was them or family members or what, but they moved in and squatted. And when we went there to our inspections, they wouldn't let us in. So then we show up with the agent who was just badass. He was so badass. And he was like, you know, he was ready to beat down the door. And ultimately, they had to get a sheriff to come out and formally evict. But it took 4 months.
Which is actually short when it comes to evictions, especially with COVID. But prior to that, like oftentimes it's a minimum of 9 months before the police officers come and remove you from the house. So it's a huge financial burden.
Yeah.
There's some good
changes. There's another change. I know. It's so delicate, that dance, though, because, you know, there are a lot of people who are really, who really feel like the tenants are entitled to stay. Like, I had a tenant stay at my property, all utilities included. So
and a,
really and driving a Range Rover
and a dandy
rent-free
parking spot in Laurel Canyon.
Great parking spot. I mean, come on. And didn't pay rent for a year. And I'm like, where's my relief? I filed the California landlord relief. They didn't even call me back. Nothing. 000. I'm like, what if I had to foreclose on this property because this person who's driving a Range and living for free on my property, I can't get out. It was so frustrating to me. So I'm like, I don't want people to gouge people. But at the same time, I'm like, hey, tenant, buy property. If you can afford this rent, you can afford to buy. Why are you renting? And landlords are ultimately the responsible. You're responsible for paying the mortgage, for upkeep, for everything. It's our property. It is not your property. You are leasing it. You do not have the right to just stay there because you want to.
But in California, you do.
It is upsetting and frustrating.
I think we'd have less of a housing issue if we had more landlord-friendly laws.
Yeah.
Period.
I mean, California is bad about that. And LA City is horrible with that.
Yeah, horrible.
But I really want to talk about this wildlife ordinance. Will you share with us what this is?
Sure. So in 2014, Councilman Paul Koretz made a motion that he wanted to preserve what was left of wildlife connectivity in the hills. This area that is this ordinance is being proposed to be applied to is between the 405 and the 101 from Sunset up and over to Ventura. So a significant area, Sherman Oaks, Studio City, Laurel Canyon, Mount Olympus, West Hollywood, the Bird Streets, Bel Air, Beverly Glen, Benedict Canyon. A lot of homes that have been in these hills for decades.
Like basically Sunset to Mulholland from west to east.
No, up and over Mulholland,
over
down
Mulholland.
To Ventura.
Oh, down to Ventura, right? You just said that. Yep.
So, you know, they they decided, okay, we've got to, you know, in the quest to be green and show that, you know, the city of LA is really looking out for the wildlife and biodiversity and climate change, they kicked it off to city planning, and in 2016 they started, you know, going through some motions. And whatever those motions are, we still don't officially know which scientists they've spoken to, we've asked, but they did reach out to animal activist groups and certain neighborhood councils that were for no more development, but they didn't reach out to the actual residents that would be affected by this.
Dramatically?
And we received, I happen to live in this area, we received our very first cute little notice here 3 weeks ago, not even 3 weeks ago, in the midst of July 4th weekend, to be notified that our public hearing is July 13th. And it's a very misleading statement. It's got a really cute fuzzy picture of a bobcat inside. It talks about how your property will be affected if it's near like a water feature, a natural water feature. I don't know anybody's homes in the hills that think they have like a natural water stream coming through their house. But then if you dig a little deeper, you see that there are like in crazy restrictions they're proposing in regards to residential floor area, setbacks, fencing that will be an incredible security breach, not just for animals, but for burglars.
Yep.
Our children and our pets will be at risk. Potential disease will spread through the hills with some of these animals. And we want to know, hey, like, where's the science? Because we absolutely love our wildlife. We want to help in the way we can. So.
Right, of course. And those of us who live in the hills, because I also am affected by this, I mean, we appreciate the howling of coyotes and we coexist with them pretty well. Like, we bring our pets in, and but I have dogs. I'm not going to build a fence. Like, let's talk about the fence part, right? Mm-hmm. We have to build a fence in this ordinance that has holes in it for wildlife to get through.
Yes, minimum of 6-inch wide gaps, which probably a very skinny person could get through as well. Definitely a child. And not only will you have to conform with these new wildlife fencing setbacks, but if you wanted to have a privacy fence, they're saying, okay, you can, but you have to pull it back in from your property line where fences normally rest today. And then you can, you know, create a security fence around within your property. So they're basically claiming, in some cases, up to 20% of your property from you and saying this is going to be for wildlife.
And what kind of wildlife is supposed to go through those?
Well, we've asked specifically which species they're talking to that they want to protect. And when we did our own research, we found that the true animals that would be able to access and go through these fences will be snakes, lizards, coyotes, squirrels, raccoons, but mountain lions, which they're using
pretending
as their poster child,
marketing thing,
can already jump over any existing wall. They have coexisted with us, you know, for a long time. I mean, this is not unique. The only barriers the mountain lions actually have right now, which is really sad, are the freeways.
Right. I was just going to say that. Mm-hmm. It's the highways.
Yeah,
because up in the hills, the Santa Monica Mountains, like, you know, they go up in the... Human beings aren't up there. Like, we're not at the top of those hills. Mm-hmm. We're coming down the side of the hills, you know? You can't even, like, get up there easily. You know, from where I... Like, my property, my former property had a whole entire back half of the hillside that deer would be in. Mm-hmm. You'd see families of coyotes go through. And they're not messing with us, and we're not messing with them. Like, they already can pass through.
Yes.
But I will tell you this. It would make me strongly reconsider buying a home in the hills if I have kids and dogs, if I can't build a fence or I have to surrender 5 feet of my property line on every side in order to build a privacy fence. Who wins in this? Who wins?
Well, and that's the big question here. We're trying to understand what's really driving this, because they're claiming this is about biodiversity and, you know, for the benefit of all Angelenos. Yet at the same time, we have SB 9 and SB 10 that's going to allow, you know, anywhere from 4 to 10 units on a single family lot here down in the city, and no trees or plants requirements, whatever. You know, not allowing us to develop our properties to their current code, which is still relatively minimal, is not going to save, you know, the city of Los Angeles and clean air. It's just not a realistic approach. So what they've masked this in, we are asking, like, what are they trying to get at?
Yeah, who's really going to win in this?
Animals already have the access they need.
Right.
Is this the knee-jerk reaction to the Mohammed Hadid developers in the hills, which none of us in the hills really are for those mega mansions?
Right.
You know, and there are some really easy restrictions and amendments you can make to existing building code.
Right.
But this is going to hurt the people like myself who still have the original 1950s, 2,000-square-foot home with the pink tile in it.
Right.
And it's, you know, we bought our homes thinking, well, maybe if I needed to, you know, add a room for my mom when she gets older, we'd be able to do that. And now they're saying, you know, no development on slopes more than 45 degrees. That's not very high in the hills. You buy a hillside home.
Right.
No grading on certain areas.
No grading.
Whatsoever.
Now, let's talk about that, because literally almost every single home inspection I have, particularly on hillside houses, has grading recommendations, because water's the enemy of the house, and when you're in, you know, on a slope, like, mm-hmm. you have to maintain the integrity of the hillside. Mm-hmm. So how do they reconcile preventing us from grading when we live in the hills? That's, well, like, one of our key maintenance.
It's a safety issue. It's a safety issue for the hills too, and the stability of the hills.
Exactly.
You
that's
know?
What I'm saying.
And so this is where, you know, they're saying, well, you can't grade and you can't destroy pristine land anymore on these slopes. When in fact, we're gonna tunnel under the hill over here and create the metro. So, but, and also the fun thing about this lovely ordinance is this applies to only residential parcels. The city is exempt from any recommendation in, not recommendation, requirement in this.
So they exempt themselves.
They exempt themselves.
How cute of
and
them.
Oh, they exempt the institutions. So
and
if
commercial?
A new private school wants to open up in the hills, or a new country club wants to take over a park setting, or if there's open space, they don't have to conform with these rules.
All right, I'm changing my zoning to country club.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate, because it's really actually hurting the smaller homeowners. It's not hurting the developers.
Right.
You know, there are certain things in here that we feel, I mean, height reduction.
Yeah, let's talk about what happens when your house burns down.
So your house burns down, the city has an interesting way of answering this question, because a lot of homeowners have asked, what happens when my house burns down, or there's a mudslide, or there's something that's very possible that could happen in the hills these days? They say, it's okay, you can rebuild it, don't worry. And that's not true, because you can rebuild it, but you have to conform with the new height requirement and the new yard requirements. And yard requirements basically means setbacks.
Right.
So that's going to alter. If you had a 35-foot tall house and you live on a ridge line, and you go on to go ahead and rebuild that house, you now can only build it to 25 feet high. It's a 10 to 11 foot reduction. Then you also have to bring in your setbacks. On a ridge line, you have additional setback that you have to conform with. So there's all these, there are wildlife buffers, there are ridge line buffers, there are, you know, district-wide regulations. And at the moment, like, none of them, no one can tell us where the science is that they came up with these ridiculous things that, you know, bird safe windows, you know, like, why don't you frost your window so the bird doesn't fly into it?
Oh my God.
No.
It's like taking it way too far.
Yes.
Way too far.
We're happy to help. I mean, and we want to help. We want to be part of, you know, protecting wildlife, you know, in increasing and enhancing the flora and fauna that we have.
Right.
But this is not it.
But yeah, this is not it. And also, let's not pretend we live in an urban environment. Like, I was just talking with one of my colleagues who owns a property in Laurel Canyon as well, and he was cutting down like a... I think it was a cypress tree or something. And the neighbor came over, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm cutting down this tree. They're like, you can't do that. He's like, yes, I can. And he said, listen, the Laurel Canyon, if everyone cuts down the tree. And he goes, listen, this used to be canyon country, okay?
Yeah.
These trees are not native to here right now. Even the oaks that you're protecting, you know, so... And this is like somebody planted this in like 1940 or something. It's no big deal. And it's, you know, obviously affecting the foundation of my house. So I'm going to cut it down. But I'm like, even that, you know, I think even people in the hills forget that their houses used to occupy wildlife. So if you're thinking you're an activist, then you really want humans to be homeless if you support this ordinance. Now, where do we go to protest this? Can we talk about that?
Yes. So we have created a website called lahills.org. So very simple to remember, lahills.org. We have all the information there on how you get in touch with your councilman, whether you're in CD4, CD5, Nithya Raman, or Paul Koretz, as well as we'll be putting up an objection letter that you can send directly to City Planning. The email that you send out is rla2040 at lacity.org. R, okay. Like as an R, so O-U-R.
O-U-R.
R-U-O-R. Okay. So that you can send it to City Planning. Right now, we're just in a categorical, oppose the wildlife ordinance. We're happy to look at a redraft, but there's so many issues here. It's so open-ended. It's so poorly written. Our land use attorneys, our zoning and building code experts are just appalled at the craziness in this. So we're just really trying to object to this now, slow it down so we can stop the process and course correct before it's too late.
Yes. Okay. So we'll post all of those links in our show notes. If you are in the Wildlife District Ordinance, the public hearing is virtual and you should have received something in the mail. If you didn't and you live in the area, you want to join the Zoom, we'll get that information to you as well. We can put that in the link. But this is like a really, really bad, big, bad one. And I feel like we need as much public support as possible to fight it. Mm-hmm. There's one more thing we had talked about, which I feel like we could talk about still. What's another like wacky law that's here for consideration that you think might not go as intended?
One that's up for discussion or mm-hmm. one that's already passed?
One that's up for discussion.
Well, I don't know. There's so many right now. Are you referring to?
I'm referring to the $5 million plus sales price additional transfer tax.
Yes. So there's a group of people who are very big on a lot of housing, you know, affordable housing, low-income housing, and they feel that the best way to create a fund for that housing in the city of Los Angeles is to once again tax the rich to give to the poor. And they've come out and said that. They're like, it's not fair that you have a $5 million house or a $10 million house. You have enough, so you need to give over here. Despite the fact that there's all these other ways for people to decide how they give.
Here's my problem is that if people want to vote for that, because, you know, I call them limousine liberals. There are a lot of people with a lot of money who do have money to contribute to housing and actually have that in their heart as something that they want to contribute. I don't have a problem with that. Of course, that's good. And we should all be encouraging ownership, in my opinion, as opposed to just low-income housing and sustain. Like, we need growth. But anyway, the problem here is, where's the accountability once the funds have left the building? Because we've voted for this a million times before. I feel like every year there's some prop that's like homelessness, housing. We give money, we have a surplus, and yet the projects are halfway done or not done at all. I'm like, is this mafia? Like, who's building these halfway? Where's the accountability for the money we've already spent on this problem? That's what I want to know.
Well, Emil, they have the accounting. We have to, you know, you can ask for it.
So why aren't the projects done that we've already paid for?
They're still in the process of construction. But the sad part is that people are advocating for these new bills, such as this one that they want to get on the ballot in November, which will add an additional 5% transfer tax in the city of Los Angeles if you sell a property that's worth more than $5 million. And it'll be even higher if the property value is over $10 million.
That is obscene.
And so all of that additional tax, which is, you know, $500,000 for one property, goes into this fund that will build more affordable and low-income housing or homeless housing. But the homeless housing piece and the low-income housing piece, they're like you said, the accountability. But
there's
also
no accountability.
The programs to really help these people. We want them to have home ownership.
That's what I'm saying.
The way to home ownership is, how do you have a job? How do you create a safety net in your
independence from federal programs.
It's not about giving someone a house. If you just, you know, if you gave me a car, thank you very much. I love it all. But please teach me how to drive it.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
I mean, it's.
And that's where the real power is. See, this is the thing that always gets me about politics. Sometimes heart seems to be in the right place, but when you look at who wins, it's not usually the people that the programs are supposed to support. And in fact, it creates this like somebody else is in there. There's a third party, and it's the people doing the construction that have no accountability. And these things play really well in headlines and make everybody feel good about themselves. But in fact, it disempowers people.
And it creates dependence on the government. That's what they want. Because where there's dependence, there is control.
We can't fault the developers because the government's the one that said, here's all this money. Go build. Please go build. And you're like, okay, like this is what I do for a living. I do it really well. I'm happy to build. If you want me to build, great. But it's the government that we need to hold accountable for, like you said, the management of these funds, but also the programs that go along with it. Because what is the end goal? And their end goal is dependence on them.
Dependence. That's the end goal. You got to watch where you're getting your information.
It's so true.
And watch who you support and how you support. Allison, such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much
for coming.
Oh, I really appreciate you guys having me. Thank you so much.
We need to follow Allison McCracken. I'll put her Instagram in the show notes. You can also share it with us right now.
It's McCracken Real Estate, McCracken_real_estate on Instagram. And you can Google Allison McCracken and I'll pop up some way too.
Fantastic. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
No, that was invigorating.
Yeah, for sure.
And I know there is even more that we have to talk about with Allison. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to potentially have her back as a guest again. Now for something slightly lighter, I'd like to wrap up with some wacky real estate laws, maybe that you didn't know existed.
Okay, bring it.
Tell me what your thoughts are about this. Okay. In Texas, any and all improvements or accessories shown to buyer become the final buyer's property at the time of sale, including family photos that are attached to the wall, artificial fireplace logs, above ground pools, and artwork.
Oh my gosh.
How about that?
Hide your art, hide your kids.
Totally.
That's crazy.
It's crazy, right?
You can't take your own personal things out of the house.
God. Well, you have to take them out before
they have
you
been
show
shown
the buyer.
Yeah, you have to take them out before. That you have to create
crazy.
A long exclusions list.
Yeah, seriously.
Huh. But why add that extra step? I don't even understand why that would be a rule.
Who would want my wedding photo?
I don't know.
I mean, I
how does it look?
Pretty good, actually.
How much are you charging?
I know, right? You just gave me an idea.
Okay, so this is a weird law. In Arkansas, six or more females may not live at the same property regardless of their relationship.
Ooh, is this a Mormon thing?
Arkansas?
I don't know.
I thought that was Bible Belt.
That's very odd.
I'm German.
I would really love to know the root of that rule.
I know. I would like to know,
oh my
too.
God.
It also extends to big families. So you can only have four daughters living under one house.
It's funny. You know, with all of our sisters and our mom, I can kind of understand that one.
Well, it might be World War. Oh, no.
But what do you do?
Like, well, there's also sororities at universities. Oh. What do you do there?
Well, I think that might not count.
It's a whorehouse
thing. That's excluded.
I bet that's where it comes from.
Okay.
Is Arkansas famous for whorehouses?
No, they're clearly banned.
Probably banned.
But maybe they were a thing.
Maybe people were traveling from east to west to settle the west and just popped into Arkansas. No, maybe it was like a thing that the Bible
that
Belt
so
people
funny.
Created to prevent prostitution at a time when prostitution was rampant.
That sounds like a good theory.
We should figure out, theory. We should dig deeper on that one.
We should dig deeper on that one. Okay, I'll try and find out. But I'm like, what about the men?
Well, they always exclude.
Six men living under one roof? It's a frat.
Maybe they don't think women will pay for that.
Oh, boom.
Well, they're true. I mean, they're right about it.
I can buy that for free.
All right, me. With the zingers. You're right. That's true. It is free. Rhode Island. Residential fence can be taller than 6 feet in Rhode Island. What is our rule here?
6 feet.
6 feet, right?
Well, unless it's the front. And then the front, actually, I think it's like, this is weird, but I think in the front of house, in some places, 3.5 feet are limited to.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah.
And that's why we have the Hollywood Hedge, the people who plant the super tall.
I love the Hollywood Hedge.
I love the Hollywood Hedge, too. But the reason why it's outlawed in Rhode Island is because it is considered a spite fence. Huh. And they say it contributes to, you know, bad juju between the neighbors. If it's higher than 6 feet, it's a spite fence.
Oh, interesting.
Which is interesting because I feel like neighbors do, and fences create good neighborly relationships sometimes, mm-hmm. but particularly in high density places like we have here in LA, you're having a two-story multifamily behind you. You want a taller fence, you know,
right? And if both parties agree, right? If your neighbor goes like, "I want a higher fence," me too. Okay, let's do it. You just do it. And so, in Rhode Island, you can't just decide with your neighbor, "I want 10 feet."
Yeah, I guess not.
You know what?
Huh. Weird.
I mean,
that's
People should be able to agree on fence size with their neighbors.
Right.
Yeah,
and that's
I agree.
Not enforceable, I think.
Well, I mean, okay. You know, I guess I can see two sides of this, which is that you want to encourage people to be neighborly, right?
True.
So if there's a fence, you can't, like, talk over the fence if it's too
high,
right?
You get a really high ladder.
Which
you
is like, cut a hole in it, like, yes. If you're on a five, like, what is it?
I think they call that a glory hole.
Creeper peepers. We didn't even talk about that as a possible thing.
Oh.
Ew.
Yeah, true.
Ew.
Ew.
True. Ew. Okay.
Glory holes from wildlife.
Ew.
That's weird.
Ew.
You have to take it there.
You just go in your backyard one day and there's like something
some
sticking
guy
through the fence. That's not cool. Anyway, fences, good neighbors. Yes, you can talk over them.
Oh, yeah, I mean, so there's that. But no, but I mean, I think each person should be able to decide their own fence height. Yeah. I mean, come on. You know, maybe you have safety worries. You know, there could be so many concerns.
Between backs of properties, it seems like it doesn't affect anybody else. I think it would be weird if people had really high fences and low fences all over the place. In front, maybe. But they're doing it already with the hedging.
Right.
So... Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it depends where you live.
Hopefully,
but again, I'm like, is this something that we need the government to regulate?
Yeah. I mean, they try to regulate anything.
Everything. Every single thing. Mm-hmm. In Scranton, Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania is where Dominique and I are from, mm-hmm. You may not install a pointed fence.
Oh.
So no picket fences.
Okay. Interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
That's a safety thing?
It's against the law. Yeah.
There must have been some kind of accident with someone... Mm-hmm.
Got impaled on
a pointed fence. Mm-hmm. You was it you who told me the story of like you know the glass that has like the mesh fencing inside of it?
Yeah, like the glass you're not supposed to be non-smashable glass.
Exactly. Was it you who told me like why that was banned?
No.
Someone told, I don't know, and maybe this is not true, but someone told me this.
Okay, tell me.
Someone told me that, you know, that like schoolhouse glass that has the mesh fencing was outlawed because there was a burglar who broke into a place, punched through the glass, and it cut his arm like really badly, like really messed up his hand. So he sued. And he won.
Oh, my God. That is just ridiculous.
Of course he did. This is America. I mean, I'm sorry. Sometimes I just have to shake my head.
This is like the insurance lady who had sex in the back seat of the car and sued the insurance company because she got an STD.
It's crazy. And
won.
That's insane.
And
won. Like $5 million.
It's like the hot coffee at McDonald's because you put it between your legs. You're an idiot.
Gone.
I'm sorry.
I know. Does somebody actually need to tell you
that
coffee is hot? That's crazy.
There must be someone who just studies these loopholes. And they're like, who's this one?
Yeah, probably.
Probably a lawyer.
In San Francisco, California, no potted plants outdoors. Mm-hmm. City officials can throw them away immediately and fine you if
try to take my plant from my porch.
I'm going to call them out on my ring. What are you doing to my potted plant?
Why? I wonder why.
Just leave the potted plants be.
Leave them alone.
Who did they bother?
I don't know.
I mean, the only thing I can think is that they could be weaponized, but so can most things.
Yeah.
Right. Everything.
I'm going to kill you with my cactus.
In New Jersey, you can't paint houses on Sunday.
Okay, that's the we don't work on Sunday thing.
Yeah.
Cool.
Whatever. Okay. In Waldron, Washington, no more than 2 toilets per building.
What?
Yeah, you can't have more than 2 toilets in any building.
So
what
if
do you
they
mean?
Have 4
like,
bathrooms?
What if there's a building that has...
I guess...
Like a public office
type building?
It says building?
Per building.
Per building.
I would love to check
that's
their
weird.
MLS and see if they have any... three or four bathroom houses.
Let's do that. Or probably they have them, they just don't list them. Oh. Unpermitted. I can't imagine modern families, like existing bigger families with only two toilets.
Yeah, that's
like crazy. You have six people in a house, two toilets.
Maybe they have a couple outhouses in the yard.
Oh my gosh. Maybe
this is a perfect reason.
Can you imagine the realtor at the open house? Don't open this door.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I mean, outside bathrooms is the solution. Mm-hmm. Okay, in California, we actually do have squatters' rights laws. Did you know that?
Yep.
Well, yes.
So squatters can become the legal owners of a home. Oh my God. Without paying the seller a dime, but you do have to pay the HOA dues and property taxes. So you have to live there for 5 years and act as an owner would. Yep. In terms of paying the HOA dues and property taxes. I really haven't seen, I haven't seen any squatters do this for 5 years.
No.
Pay property taxes. They're usually like meth heads and insane people. I showed a property one time where the squatters were in there with guns, like just pointing out the window like this.
Wow.
As we were approaching, they pulled the thing and I was like, okay, I think we're going to skip this one. Steve still went around the back. I was like, you're crazy, man. I'm going back to the car. I'm not going to get killed to see some property. But yeah, we have squatters' rights here.
Yeah.
That's nuts. Ridgeland, Mississippi, no burglar bars outside your house. You're not allowed to put the bars.
Now that one I understand.
Me
because
too.
They're horrible, honestly.
They are awful.
Get an alarm system.
Yeah. Seriously, we're past the point of this.
I agree.
And I have a hypothesis about this too, which is not based in any kind of actual fact. But I feel like this was one of those pre-integration laws where some like bar salesperson went down the street going like, hey, there are people of color moving into your neighborhood. You better get bars on your windows or something because they like sold them down a lot of streets where anybody who hasn't renovated their house still has them.
Yeah.
But it comes from that era. They're from like the 50s.
It's weird. I mean, I don't know. I mean, because you see them a lot in areas that are very diverse. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So but those areas weren't diverse before.
Right.
That's the thing, is that there were white flight. You know, it happened like pre-civil rights laws. Like in the 50s, you saw dynamics changing in different neighborhoods. There are people capitalizing on that, I'm sure.
Mm. See, I thought those went on around the riots, like around that period.
Oh, I don't know. It's worth investigating.
I'm not sure. I'm not 100%.
I'm not sure either. But anyway,
But now people are taking them off because they're ugly and they detract from the value of the neighborhood.
They do. It's
period.
That whole broken window
and they
theory.
Make people think, is it not safe here?
No. Right. Every time they see those bars, they're like, okay, I see a lot of houses with bars on the windows. Yeah. I'm like, until someone renovates the house, those bars stay, usually, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And then once someone renovates it, they take them off, they replace the windows or whatever, keep the original windows. And guess what? You know, you're in a city. You get a security system.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, get a security system. Mm-hmm. Boulder, Colorado. No upholstered furniture outdoors. Seems like a little overreaching.
Yeah.
I mean, are they considering upholstered? Is umbrella fabric upholstered? Because umbrella is supposed to be all weather material.
Interesting.
You know, I mean, Boulder obviously snows and probably rains. And has sun too sometimes.
It might be a little dusty.
Might be dusty. But what is the point of being able to, like it says, that's all upholstered furniture. Couches, chairs, chaise lounges, everything is prohibited.
Okay.
What do you think it is?
I think, this is just a guess, but.
Go for it.
I know that, for example, like back in Pennsylvania, there are definitely some people who have like full on upholstered couches and lazy boys
on their front porch.
It's horrible.
And it is not a nice sight.
It's not cute.
It's not cute. So
that's true.
I can understand that one, actually.
Okay. So only wooden porch swings.
Only
it's
stylish,
for the aesthetic of the neighborhood.
Only
you know
stylish
what I mean?
Furniture, please.
So we're okay with laws that keep good design.
Yes. We absolutely are down with that.
Okay with laws that ban bad design.
No living spaces.
Well, they should ban bad design. Ban the gray floors. Ban them.
Ban laminates all together.
Ban everything chrome.
Ban it. Ban
That's it for us today on episode 109 of Under All is the Land. Please like, comment, and subscribe. Thanks for hanging in there with us, and we'll see you on the next episode. Bye.
See you next time.
wealth. Get educated, do for yourself. Add a couple notches to your belt. Under all is the land. Under all is the land.